Hey people, are you in the market for a new watch but don't know how to go about purchasing one? Well, let me help you. As your watch concierge, I will source, help you purchase, do all the work for you, and get you the best possible price at no additional cost to you. You have nothing to lose and nothing to risk. Please schedule a call with me today at by contacting me at www.amitdavehonda@gmail.com. You can call me at 702-608-0251. Okay, on with the show. On today's episode, I speak to Brendan McDonald, the producer of the WTF podcast. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. I'm on the phone with Brendan McDonald, the producer of the WTF podcast. How are you doing, Brendan?
I'm good, Amit. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for doing this, man. I have to say, thank God for social media. I'm not going to tell people exactly how we met and what form of social media, but if it weren't for social media, I don't think you and I would have been able to connect.
Yeah, that's great. I'm also happy that I have somewhat of a presence there. I am often questioning whether I do, so I'm glad you were able to find me.
No, absolutely, absolutely. You know, like, I have to say, you know, I mean, this is a totally... My show is mostly a watch-related show, which is turning into a pop culture show because I have so many more interests than just watches. Watches is what I do. But I have to say, if it weren't for the WTF podcast, I don't think I would get off my ass and start my own podcast. So I want to thank, first of all, I want to thank you and Mark Maron for doing a phenomenal job and inspiring me to do one because I have close to 100 episodes now, so I'm pretty excited.
Well, that's cool, and that's really flattering that you would say that. So I appreciate it. I know Mark appreciates it. We both kind of continue to be humbled by that. That you know, people have taken our example of things and used it to launch things on their own. So that is really cool.
No, thank you, man. Thank you. So you're an East Coast guy. I'm an East Coast guy. You're from New York, right?
That's right. Yeah, and I'm in New York.
Oh, you're in New York. Okay, cool. Yeah. I am actually from Boston, and I live in Vegas, and, I mean, lived on the East Coast my whole life, then moved to the West Coast 7-8 years ago, but at heart, I still think I'm the total fuck you East Coast kind of guy.
Well, that's good. You need that while you're in Vegas.
Oh, yeah, because you don't know who's real and who's not.
Exactly. Got everybody playing everything.
Do you ever come out to Vegas, or?
Only... twice on business, and haven't really had a lot of time to spend, a thorough examination time there. But I've been there for, you know, briefly to just enjoy what I was doing while I was there.
Okay, cool. Well, if you ever come, please don't hesitate to look me up when you're here.
Sure thing. Sure thing.
And Brendan, actually, I wanted to get into, first of all, you're 2015. I don't think anyone could have had a better year in terms of, you know, notoriety, success, just all the accolades you guys sort of achieved in 2015. I know there was a lot of great things that happened personally. I know, you know, Mark's dream of being able to talk to Lorne Michaels from Saturday Night Live, and then, of course, Obama and, my God, Mick Jagger and Keith Richards. I mean, all those interviews, I mean, look, Mark is an amazing talent, and of course he's the voice, but I think what you do, which is producing and the back end sort of thing, at times, I mean, he's referenced you and thanked you many times on the show, but I just know from producing my own show and doing my own things, it's a very thankless job in a way. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to interview you, because, I mean, without you, I don't think the show could really have happened. How did this, like, first of all, how did you get to meeting Mark?
That was about 12 years ago now, almost exactly 12 years ago. And we started working together on a radio show. It was a radio network that was created in 2004 called Air America, which now, as we get farther and farther away from it, fewer and fewer people have any memory of what it was. But it was attempted to be kind of like a talk radio response to the predominant radio, terrestrial radio modes at the time, which were all either right-wing talk or shock jock talk or just even, you know, kind of generic sports talk. There was no real kind of political talk radio from a progressive bent or even just kind of from a neutral bent. It was all, you know, it's mostly the big syndicators putting up Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and, you know, wacky morning zoo shows that went coast to coast. So Air America was this kind of noble yet flawed endeavor. And Mark and I met there doing the morning show. And it was just kind of like a pretty quick connection on our parts that we both liked the way that each of us operated. We got each other. I was totally enamored of him as a talent and specifically as a radio talent. Like, I loved listening to him just even as a fan, like, you know. Sure. And by fan, I should say, like, I was a fan of what we were doing on the radio. I didn't really particularly know his comedy before we started working together. Like, I knew of him vaguely. Like, I could be like, oh, yeah, I've seen that guy on HBO and whatnot. But I didn't really follow his career or even know his material that well. So I kind of got to know him on the basis of what, you know, what he basically does now as a broadcaster. That was my introduction to him. And I just kind of felt immediately like that this was a horse to back, and I was happy to do it.
Well, you guys work so well together. I remember watching Mark on Conan, because I think he was on Conan like 60 times or something.
Yeah, right.
Like that. And I was just like, who is this angry guy?
Yeah.
Like, I just remember him being like super angry and aggressive. And it's one of those things, because I was a huge fan of Conan O'Brien, and growing up on the East Coast, I used to watch each episode, but I didn't watch it primarily for Conan. I started watching it because I noticed the watch that he was wearing. and then I sort of got into it and more, and then I realized, wow, Conan's also from Boston, like me. And then, you know, then seeing Mark like more than a dozen times on there, I was like his face kind of stuck in my head. And then, you know, in 2009, I believe he launched WTF. You guys launched WTF?
Yeah, it was 2009. We'd worked on and off on projects, you know, right up to that. And, you know, I think our feeling at the time was like, let's stop relying on other people to kind of give us a go at this, because, you know, it really wasn't working out. It was working out, I think, in our minds, from a content standpoint. We were happy with the work we were always doing, but nobody ever really seemed to feel like they were willing to give us the reins of something the way we wanted it, the type of show we wanted to do. You know, we were always up against either, you know, format restrictions or kind of a particular, carrying a particular pail of water for a company or whatever the hurdles may be. You know, I think our feeling was, let's just do this the way we want to do it. We know we've done it now, you know, in different venues for 5 years. And we have enough people that have listened to it and have liked what we've done that we can, you know, at least guarantee ourselves a small audience that would, you know, come to the table and find us.
Wow.
So that was really the start of the podcast. And the idea was, you know, always small scale. Like we had never had any real grand ambitions. I mean, in 2009, it was foolish to have too many ambitions for a podcast. They were already kind of ghettoized as this like niche tech a delivery system that had no way to be monetized. So,
right.
And I'm not like a, you know, tremendously entrepreneurial guy. I mean, I have enough sense that if you ask me to run something, I can run it, but I was not going to be the person to have vision.
Sure.
Of how to turn podcasts into, you know,
a living
money-making platform for, you know, across, genres and, you know, and now as we see, you know, a lot of kind of corporate influence, paving inroads into the medium.
Well, not only have you guys, you know, revolutionized podcasting and influenced so many people, including myself, but you've also, like, I just remember your first sponsors, you know, that you guys had, whether it was Squarespace or whether it was, you know, the Postal Service one that you guys have,
yeah.
Stamps.com or any of those. I mean, all these companies now are like, that you never heard of before except on WTF are now massive companies. Like, it's just, it's insane. Like, when I look at it and I say, wow, like the evolution is just unbelievable. And I don't think that's a coincidence either. I mean, I think that there's definitely some cohesion there, and it's unbelievable. And it just, it shows you that, because I know, like just from hearing the podcast from the beginning, I mean, I know it wasn't easy for Mark, you know, like he didn't have like an easy road. Like, you know, like even now when I see him on, whether it's on his show, I mean, he's very, it seems like he's pretty true to who he is. And it also seems like, you know, he's still, I mean, as much as I'm sure he's calmed down with being, having that angst, he's definitely had, there's something in there that keeps him going, that he still has that edge, right?
Like sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
And that edge is what spurs him on. And that's kind of really cool to see that he still has that to keep him going.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, in my perspective of it is like, that's why the show is listened to by people. That's why anyone who's a fan of it is generally a fan of it for that reason. I think even people who come to the show and just say like, yeah, I don't know Mark Maron is, but I like, you know, that show has a lot of guests I like to hear, and I listen to the interviews, and that to me is still an ascent of what I'm talking about. It's like they are a fan of the style of presentation he's putting forward. I mean, you can hear interviews with most every person that's been on our show somewhere else. And I think we are still able to maintain uniqueness 100% because of Mark, you know, and his style and his kind of unvarnished approach that includes him putting himself out there. And, you know, as much as he's asking something of another person, if not sometimes more, which I think, you know, candidly is the reason why he's able to get stuff out of people, that he shows them that, you know, he's going to lay himself bare. And so they really don't have to worry about, you know, being exposed, you know, talking into an area where they're going to expose themselves or feel unsafe. Like, he creates a very safe and, you know, comforting environment to share.
Immediately. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I think he, you know, he's very disarming, you know, and I think he's very disarming and being very, you know, very open and honest. I mean, one thing I've realized, whether it's, you know, I know it was, he's referenced, you know, some of the interviews that he's done that's been difficult, like Harry Dean Stanton. Like, it wasn't easy, and I know he beat himself up about it, but he probably got more out of him than most people who've ever interviewed him.
Yeah,
you know?
It's funny. Yeah, that's like one of the interviews. There's a handful of them where he's referenced how difficult they were, and I think that was the last one that he did that with, and has, you know, we've talked about it since, and he's said since then that, you know, he's not going to do that anymore because you'd mentioned that, oh, this was a difficult interview because, you know, he said people are bringing their own perceptions to the interview. So just because he's finding that, you know, there might have been, you know, a difficult or less traditional road to kind of get through to a particular person, that doesn't mean it still wasn't revealing to the listener or enjoyable to the listener. You know, so that was kind of a little lesson that we learned was like, hey, there's no need to, you know, apologize for something that really will, you know, have no negative.
It's beyond your control, and it's beyond your control. I mean, you know, and then you go from something like that to, you know, you look at an interview like Obama, or you look at an interview like Mick Jagger or Keith Richards. I'd say more notably when he smoked a cigarette with him, and he was like a little kid. Like, it was unbelievable for him to go from sort of that commanding voice to seeing him vulnerable, like a, you know, like a kid, like, oh my God, this is my rock star hero.
Right. Well, I mean, like, I think mostly because, you know, we're still, Mark and I are still kind of sticking to the theory we had when we started the podcast, that like a lot has changed since we, you know, did our first episodes in 2009. You know, particularly the most noticeable thing is that the show is really an interview show, or as Mark likes to call it, a conversation show.
Right.
And that's the brunt of every episode, about an hour to an hour and a half of a conversation. And it really didn't start like that. It started with us thinking we could do a type of version of what we did on the radio, which was, you know, a multifaceted type of show. And my belief in Mark, that he is a good anchor for that kind of thing. And so that people would enjoy, you know, hearing his musings on life, hearing him interact with his friends, which we did a lot more of back in the early days, hearing him read listener emails. And there was a much more grab bag approach to it. We even did some, you know, episodes with other comedians playing characters, which, you know, is kind of, you know, way off the path of what we do now, especially like as the show has been known for being, you know, so authentic, to put that kind of in quotes, and being this like place where people are honest. You know, early on we were doing things like fake guests or people saying, claiming they were people that they weren't. And I still think though that everything that unified that was, you know, my belief that Marc Maron is entertaining, and that his, you know, total honesty and self-reflection is, if, you know, if done well — not everybody can do this, but I believe that he can — if that's done well, it really provides like a huge catharsis for a listener, that, you know, that somebody can be so, you know, hypercritical and deeply self-examining and still be entertaining and still kind of take you down paths you might not expect. You know,
absolutely.
That was what I always thought was fun about Mark. And I always thought that was fun, you know, when we were doing it on kind of like a, even what was a heavily politics driven show. You know, he would sometimes come to me after a show and be like, I don't know, are we really addressing the politics of this as much? I was like, dude, talk about your cats and your breakfast cereal, you're going to be political. Like your ideology and ethos are going to come through no matter what you talk about, because you can't help it. You're too honest.
That's just who you are.
In a good way. Right.
And I think that the WTF podcast, I don't know how else to say this, but it almost paid respect to the late David Bowie, who basically paved the way for a lot of people to be themselves. Like that, Mark did the same thing with podcasting. He allowed people to be themselves and true to themselves through his own honesty, which resonated, I think, on not just a national level, but on a global scale.
I love your framing of it, and I would gladly take it.
Well, it's true. I mean, listen, I'm a very, when I think of, like, one of the things, you know, obviously Mark has a very original voice. And again, Brendan, I can not express to you how important it is. You're a very humble guy yourself, that it takes two hands to clap. So without you, none of this could happen. I think also, like, you know, one of the things that I find very interesting about Mark is that, you know, he went to school in Boston. I think he worked at the Coffee Connection in Cambridge. I was raised in Harvard Square. And I remember going there, you know, my family had a business. I know he's, you know, like, his mother took him to art galleries when he was younger. So he's into art as well. And he's into really good music, you know, and he's into that whole CBGB's Warhol scene. I'm totally into that. So it totally, for me, it totally resonated. I'm like, where did this guy come from? You know, and that's, I think, what resonated most with me. He's very multifaceted in his interests. It's not just like, it's not just comedy, or it's not just saying the word fuck, or it's not just his cats. There's so much more to who he is, and I think it's interesting to hear him, his inner monologue come out on the record, because you kind of are listening sort of to it. And when he's not interviewing someone, you're listening basically to his internal monologue.
Sure.
And not many people have the ball to execute that in a very, very original way.
Well, I think I want to preface this by saying, you know, obviously, like, Mark's one of my dear friends, and, you know, we have a lot of shared history together. And there's, like, I never go more than, you know, any few seconds without fully considering, like, his emotions and his life as a person. But the stuff you're saying is kind of like my, you know, that's like my reason to be as a producer, is like, he's the medium I work in. Like, people say that, oh, you know, you're a podcast producer. It's like, well, no, I produce one podcast. Like, I do, I I produce as much podcast as I produce television. You know, I work on a television show too, and it's not, I'm not a television producer or a,
right.
You know, and so when I really, when I think of it as like, what is it that I work in? I kind of have worked very well, gotten a large chunk of career mileage out of, you know, knowing how to work well with Marc Maron and use it. And if you conceive of him as what you're saying, this multifaceted, personality. I mean, that's what I've had to kind of be okay with myself is like, how do we allow all of that to show? Like, I can't just start thinking about Marc as an interviewer, right? I can't
just start
thinking about Marc as a stream of consciousness, monologist. Like, he's all these things, and he's going to have that connection with people because of that. And that's what's going to get people to keep coming back. So, and, you know, to kind of take that to something else you were talking about, like you mentioned earlier, you said that this, you know, giving me acknowledgement, which I appreciate, saying that this is a somewhat of a thankless job. And you know, you also mentioned, you know, saying that I come off as somewhat humble because of that. Not, I don't know if you feel like maybe I take the credit that I deserve. But what the way I actually see it in both of those instances is I don't see it as thankless at all, to be perfectly honest with you. And I can see why some people do, because, you know, especially in a situation that you're in, you're doing everything. Like you're on the microphone, you're conducting this interview, but you're also responsible for the same type of things that I'm responsible for. And I know what my job is and I know how to do that job, which does not involve me getting on a microphone. I mean, the number of interviews that I've done like this, talking to you about the show, you can count on one hand. Like, I don't tend to do this very often and I don't seek it out. And the reason for that is exactly what you said about having that connection with Marc. Like, you're not there to have a connection with the show. You're not there to have a connection with a crew, right? There's not like three or four guys on the mic that jump on and off and have little characters.
Right.
You know, there's not the, there's not even the sense that, you know, people may know who I am and I have been on the show. You know, he and I did an episode after the president because we thought that would be of great interest to people. How did this come about? But there's no real desire to make the show seem like there are, you know, kind of multiple switches being thrown and that there's, you know, this Wizard of Oz person behind the curtain. Like, I don't see myself as that, and I would never want to present the show is that. And so I think the best way I can do my work and the best way, the way the show can be represented best is if it's Marc Maron's show, if whenever anyone is listening to it, they're just thinking of Marc Maron. They're thinking about how they either like Marc Maron or how he drives them crazy or how like they're looking to see what, you know, he's reacting to, you know, after knowing that he, you know, lost his cat or whatever, you know, that stuff is part of the reason why people come back. And you know, that's, I think, kind of lessons I learned working in radio, you know, building a relationship with an audience. And so, you know, I see it as my job to make sure that people are, you know, listening to Marc and his life and that they, when they're coming back to the show every week or twice a week, or even if it's just every month, that they know it's like the comforting place for them. I think a lot of that was stuff that I learned doing terrestrial radio. You know, figuring out how to build relationships with an audience so that, you know, no matter where they were, they knew that they could turn that radio on and say, okay, here, these are the people that I want to hear from. This is the, you know, environment I want to be dropped into.
Sure.
None of that stuff has really changed even with podcasting. I mean, if anything, it's even more explicit than that because it's even more intimate. You know, you get people listening on the treadmill and people listening, you know, in the shower, right? And it's a solitary experience. You put these headphones on, you really feel like you're connecting with these people. So I am totally, you know, not only happy to do it, it is like my overriding philosophy of how to do it, to kind of keep myself out of there, make sure that nobody listening to it is thinking like, I love how this show is produced. Like, I don't want them thinking that. I want them
No. I don't think I mean it in that way. I think what I'm saying is that without you doing what you do on your end, Marc couldn't do what he does so effortlessly on his end. And
so
that's my point.
That's very much appreciated. I, you know, always, you know, believe that the two of us give exactly what we both need to give 100%. And I think we both acknowledge that, like, a lot of it just happens to be a great chemistry situation. We both get how the other one works, and we both get what each other's strengths are. And we, you know, kind of trust each other implicitly on the things we do well. Like, I don't interfere at all with the interviews that he does. I mean, we sometimes talk about them beforehand and, you know, have a conversation about a direction he might like to go. But,
sure,
you know, it's very, very rarely that it ever extends to anything beyond that, because I know that he does not work well if his head is loaded up with a bunch of pre-arranged directions or questions or fabrications of how to conduct the interview. He is relying on having a connection with the person. And the best way he's going to do that, even if he has some thoughts in his head about what he might ask or where he might go, the best way for him to do that is just to feel the process out as it goes. And, you know,
well,
similarly,
that's the most natural way. That's the most natural
yeah.
way. It's, you know, it's like people, like when I'm in the watch business, you know, I kind of, there's no one doing a podcast really on watches. And I started doing it probably 2 years ago, and people were like, you know, people in the watch industry, watch company presidents or whoever, have been like, well, aren't you going to send me questions? And I'm like, no. They're like, why not? I'm like, because then it won't come across as authentic.
Right.
And they're like, really? I'm like, yeah, just let it play out. Like, if it sounds like shit, I'll edit the shit out of it.
Yeah.
But,
well, it's funny. Like, there was a situation a couple weeks ago, an interview that Mark did with David Spade.
Yeah.
And there it's a, you know, I say it's fairly well known. Maybe it's not that well known, but I definitely knew about it, and I remembered it fairly well, that that Spade did not go to Chris Farley's funeral. And I remembered that it got, you know, a bit of press and people saying things, and, you know, there was some not great reaction to it.
Right.
I remember at the time. And, you know, I'm listening to Mark. I'm not there when Mark does the interviews. He's always, it's just, you know, he keeps himself by himself, him and the interview subject in the garage. And then I listen to it afterwards, and we, you know, can shape the show that way. But so, I mean, you know, listening to it after it was conducted, you know, Mark was talking with David Spade about Farley, and he said, and what, the funeral, was that a big deal? It was a big thing. You know, a lot of people there. And Spade was like, nah, I didn't go. And Mark was like, oh, really? And they then talked about it in a very, like, you got to be able to see what David's real emotions were about why
Absolutely.
He didn't go to
Absolutely. I listened to that because it was very, very, very honest, and it wasn't forced.
Right. Yeah, I just wanted to throw in there that, like, I think that if Mark had known ahead of time, because then I did not know about the thing with that Spade didn't go to that funeral, and, or, you know, or did you know and you're just playing coy? And he said, no, I didn't know. And, like, to me, that's a benefit of that conversation.
1,000,000%.
I've looked at other interviews that Spade has given with that, and people have framed that question as in, you know, terms of, like, now I know you took heat for not going to Farley's funeral, and David, rightfully so, has just a very rote answer for that kind of question and says, you know, it was a personal thing, and I, you know, that was a choice I made, and
well, what
that
does is puts you on the defensive immediately.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And what Mark did was so smart, because by him not knowing, it came across as really fucking honest.
Yeah.
You know, and David was about really able to talk about it. Rather,
yeah. That's another big reason why Mark won't read, like, you know, entire memoirs or biographies of people when they come in, because, you know, he wants to be surprised by the stories. You know, he wants to have the authentic reaction to, you know, somebody telling them something that, you know, even if it's a well-worn anecdote, you know, he wants to react to it or as if he's hearing it for the first time, which most of the time he is.
Now, to switch gears a little bit, like, you know, after producing such an amazing show, I believe you guys have over, like, 250 million
downloads,
something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, it's got to be close to 250 at this point, because I know we passed 200 last year. Yeah,
that's amazing. Like, you must be, like, you know, a very sought after producer. I mean, people must want to work with you all the time, based on based on the work you've done with Mark.
I mean, like, I wouldn't say that I'm, you know, getting offers to go work on other things all the time, but I think a lot of that has to do with people knowing you know, where I'm, you know, currently engaged. So,
right.
You know, it's not like, you know, WTF is, you know, Mark and my business as much as it is our show. So, you know, there's no real chance of anyone coaching me from the show. So, you know, but I definitely, think that it's recognized out there that we do a high quality show and that, you know, it's kind of, reached a certain level amongst in the podcasting landscape. So, yeah, I'm appreciative of that. And I think, you know, my general feeling is I'm just going to, you know, keep my head down and keep doing it.
Well, great. Yeah. I know, like, after the Lorne Michaels interview, I think Mark made reference to it on a couple of occasions that, you know, I mean, before the Lorne Michaels interview, he was like, you know, once he was able to get it, the show would stop or something like that. And then obviously once he got it, you know, he made it very clear that the show will go on.
Right.
Do you see the show evolving? Do you see the format of the show evolving into something? Do you have plans for it to evolve into something else? Or do you feel like, I mean, if it ain't broken, don't fix it?
Well, yeah, we never had any plans for it to ever evolve into anything. So I think it would be folly for us to, you know, plan for, you know, any kind of future changes. I think that what we've always done is just kind of been guided by our interests. You know, both Mark's interest in the type of people he talks to and my interest in what I think sounds good and, you know, the type of programming that I'd like to create with. I mean, that's what this really started as, was like, basically like, think of the thing you'd like to do and do it, you know, and you know, I'm a guy who liked making shows, and I was like, let's make the exact type of show that I would like to make without anyone telling us, you know, what we can and can't do. And what I've liked, you know, in terms of a type of show to listen to, that's evolved, you know, it's evolved beyond something that was kind of more variety based into something that is a little more focused, a little more direct in terms of the presentation. And, you know, can I see that continuing to evolve? Sure. And, you know, we've had talks about, you know, what we can do, in the future. That's not just Mark interviewing in the garage, you know, doing more, kind of interviewing in the field, going to places where guests aren't normally visited, as opposed to just kind of waiting for everyone to wind up showing up in LA. Like, we'd like to take some trips overseas and do some, talks with people that we don't normally have access
That's
to.
That's great. That's
yeah.
great.
So,
I
mean, it's more of an evolution in the, you know, procedure and practicality of the show, making any kind of plans to change the show or do something different.
Totally understandable. And, like, you know, beyond, like, you working with Mark and working so well together, I'm sure you guys must have similar interests, right? Like, in terms of music or in terms of, you know, just culture in general. I mean, I'm sure there must be a bond there as well.
Yeah, I guess, like, I mean, I think that if, you know, Mark sat down and wanted to play, like, the top five albums he wants to listen to, and I did with mine, I don't think there'd be any overlap, like, in that sense. Like, we don't, like, share exactly the same mentality on things. But I think we both have, like, a very high appreciation of, you know, well-done material, whether it's movies, music, literature, drama. You know, we go to plays together, we spend a lot of time, like, when we've seen a movie or something, we talk on the phone about it. I mean, we're kind of, you know, not a lot different than most people who, you know, not even people who work together, people are just friends that talk about
good friends,
you know,
yeah.
Pop culture and stuff. So, you know, we part of that is because we enjoy each other's company and we like doing that. The other part of it is that, you know, it helps us, you know, continue to understand each other and understand what's going on in the world and, you know, feel like we're a part of it as opposed to, you know, operating in our own bubbles.
That's pretty cool, man. I you know, when he was describing, or I think when you were both describing the day, the episode after the president one aired, I actually worked with President Clinton for 3.5 hours. I put him in a nice watch in 2004. And then last year was the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's March on Washington speech. And President Clinton was delivering the message and was wearing the watch I sold to him 10 years prior. So
oh, wow.
It's so funny because when I look at Mark and I look at the show and I look at it and I say to myself, wow, like, I know he's a veteran in comedy. I know I'm sort of like a veteran at this point and watches, but it's so weird how, you know, just to see his evolution and to, there's a, I'm not saying we have exactly the same life or the same trajectory, but there's a lot of similarities. So that's what really, really got me into this. And rather than, you know, obviously at some point I would love to meet you and I'd love to meet Mark if it's in the card. But I think like more than anything, I wanted to interview you because I think you're a very honest guy. I mean, I think you're both very honest, but I wanted to get your take on it as well because I think it's an interesting one. So
well, good. I hope I gave you something that was interesting. I hope it didn't disappoint.
Not at all. Not at all. I hope. First of all, thank you for making time for me. I know you're a very busy man, so I can't thank you enough for doing this. You know, as much as as much as you're not like, you know, getting like offers up the ass, I'm sure you're a busy enough man where people are reaching out to you for all sorts of things. So the very fact that you made time for me today, it means the world to me.
Hey, no, my pleasure. Like I said, I don't talk about this stuff a lot, so I feel like I'm, you know, when I have an opportunity to do it, I still feel okay doing it because I'm not, you know, regurgitating talking points or anything. It still feels pretty fresh and natural.
Yeah, no, I enjoy doing this. I think it's going to come across really well, and I think, you know, those people who listen to, you know, WTF or people who may have heard of it may have a totally different, you know, understanding of the show or may want to start listening. I tell everybody about it, and it's funny. I was on the plane the other day. I travel a lot, too, and this guy was laughing his balls off, and I look over, and he's listening to WTF, and he was just like, and he just looks at me and goes, I fucking love this show. And I'm like, rock on, brother. And we just like high-fived each other like we were in a fucking boys club, you know?
That's awesome.
I'm going to have, you know, I'm having a 40th birthday party in New York. While I'm there, I don't know if I can give you the dates if you have the time. I'd love to meet up with you for a coffee or a drink or something if you're around. If not, I totally understand. But just to put a name to a face.
Sure. Yeah. Let me know when it's going to be. I'll send me the info and I'll definitely try to work it out.
Thank you so much, Brendan. And I hope you have an amazing day and continued success to you and Mark. And thanks a lot, man.
Hey, yo, thank you, Amit. I appreciate it.
Take care, brother. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you have it, folks. That was my one-on-one interview with Brendan McDonald, the producer of the WTF podcast. One of the major inspirations in me doing a podcast. I had the idea actually in 2008. I was very, very lazy. It took me about a year, year and a half, almost. Actually, it took me like 3 or 4 years to really get it off the ground. But, you know, after listening to the WTF podcast and Mark Maron and seeing, you know, sort of the parallel lines, if you will, in weird ways, I said, why not? I've got to do this, and I'm so much happier for it. So thank you, Brendan, for doing it. He's a super nice guy, and I look forward to seeing him when I'm in New York. As you know, my podcast is a watch podcast. It will evolve eventually into a pop culture show. I will always try to sprinkle in some sort of watch element into it. It may not be a purely watch focus, but because my interest, as I mentioned in the interview with Brendan, are so much more than just watches. But watches has been, you know, a major theme in my life. So that definitely will remain constant in some way, shape, or form. So please look forward to future episodes. I'd like to thank Shalboy Music and DJ Flipside for providing the musical tracks to this podcast. If you're looking for a watch and don't know how to go about it, let me help you and do all the work for you. I will source the watch, find you the best price, advise you and guide you at no additional cost to you. I work with the best authorized dealers in the world. You have nothing to lose. Please contact me at amitdevhonda@gmail.com. You can call me at 702-608-0251. If you want to know what's going on with me and the watch industry, please check out my website at www.amitdevhonda.com. Please also follow me on Twitter and my Instagram. My handles for both are at Amit Dev Honda. You can definitely check out my Facebook watch page. It's packed with information, and please don't forget to like it. I'll also throw the link down below to my weekly newsletter. It's a one-and-done process. And until we meet again, rock on and fly back.